Hi, this is Irene Watson. I'm managing editor of Reader Views.
And I'm Victor Volkman from Loving Healing Press. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. We're speaking to you today live from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Austin, Texas, over at internetvoicesradio.com. You can hear us every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on this station. Today's topic is Elements of Good Storytelling. And our special guest who will be joining us this hour is Joan Neubauer of WordWrite.biz. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. If you want to participate in today's show, you can instant message us to info@authorsaccess.com. Now, before we get started this evening, I would like to remind all our listeners that Reader Views and Loving Healing Press are sponsoring a short story writing contest. Send us your true story of a transformational event in your life, and it could appear in our upcoming anthology of stories. The good news is the deadline has just been extended to February 1st, 2007. For more details, or to send in your story, go to www.readerviews.com and click on Literary Contest on the far right sidebar. Now tonight, Joan will share with us the secrets of good storytelling that all fiction authors must know. Specifically, we'll be talking about story construction from beginning to end, narrative, characterization, dialogue, and, of course, conflict. Joan is author and co-author of more than a dozen books and brings considerable editorial experience to this week's discussion. Joan and her husband, Steve Neubauer, you may recognize from an earlier broadcast, operate WordWrite.biz, a publishing house in Alpine, Texas. WordWrite has acquired a reputation as one of the finest publishing houses to showcase new authors. Since 2000, WordWrite has published over 150 titles for new authors. Wow! Joan continues to write books, articles, and columns. She travels extensively and is available to speak on a variety of subjects for writers' groups, civic and service organizations, and schools. And now we're going to this week's special guest, Joan Neubauer. Hello, Joan.
Hello. How are you?
We're doing great here.
Well, I'd like to thank you all for inviting me to be on your program this evening. I've been looking forward to it. I was very pleased when you all asked me to do the Elements of Story, Goldilocks and the Three Bears. This is one I really enjoy talking about with authors because it is so much fun and it's very informative, I think. It's all about story. And for some authors, story can be a very complicated thing because they think, oh, I have to take care of dialogue, I have to put characterization in here, I have to keep my narrative this way. And storytelling, if you really think about it, is something very instinctive to us. We know what a good story is because we know what the elements of good storytelling are. If we don't think about it too much, if we just let our imaginations go back to childhood, because some of the very basic stories that I like to use for models are those fairy tales that Mom and Dad told us when we were children. You think about the Three Little Pigs, Little Red Riding Hood, and I happen to particularly like Goldilocks and the Three Bears because it has all of the elements that you need to tell a good story. Now, first I'd like to say what story is not. Story is not saying, I was born in Chicago in 1940, I moved to Duluth in 1945, I graduated high school in 1958. That is not a story. That is a chronicle. It's a timeline, if you will, of events. But if you were to write your life story in that style, the reader would have no idea, really, who you are, the things you did, the things that were important to you, and they would come away thinking, oh yeah, so what? If indeed they managed to read more than a page or two. But a good story grabs you. The characters worm their way into your heart. You get to know them. You get inside their heads. You get to understand how they think, and you care about them. As a reader, you come to care, and that's why you turn the pages, because you want to know what happens to them next. Storytelling is not new to us. It goes back, oh, gee, I think to the dawn of language. I mean, can you just imagine the shaman of a clan sitting in the center of a circle with the campfire burning, reflecting off of his face, telling the story to the rest of the clan of a particularly heroic deed that someone did, a particularly interesting hunt. I mean, he would have the members of the clan sitting on the edge of their rocks. They would love it. And so that is your job as a storyteller. Each good story has certain elements. One of the elements, the big element, I call complete structure. And I call it complete structure because when you get done reading the story, you have no expectations that anything else is going to follow. The storyteller has resolved all of the problems, all of the conflict, and everything is ended. You expect nothing else. And that complete structure consists of a beginning, a middle, and an end. Now, I see a lot of manuscripts from a lot of authors who submit their work to us. And very often, we reject manuscripts because they have a great beginning and a wonderful middle, but they get to the end and it kind of fizzles out. And to get to know what I mean, think about being in the doctor's office. And you pick up a magazine to read, and you're reading a great article, and it says continued on page 78. And you turn to page 78 waiting to see how this is going to end, and there is no ending because somebody ripped out the page for the coupon or the recipe on the opposite side. So that's, you have to have these three components, beginning, middle, and end. And within the beginning, the middle, and the end, you do some development there. And you have four separate elements. Those four separate elements that will make your story come alive are narrative, characterization, dialogue, and conflict. And if you look back, you look at Goldilocks and the Three Bears, Goldilocks has all of these elements. Let's start with the beginning of Goldilocks. You have Goldilocks, and you have Mama, and you have the classic beginning for any good story. You have the introduction of the two characters, the mother and Goldilocks, and you have an allusion to the other characters, the three bears. Because what does the mother say to Goldilocks? She says, stay in the yard. Don't leave the yard and go out into the woods because there are dangers out there, because there are wild animals, maybe even bears. And this creates a conflict for Goldilocks. It introduces our characters. It begins dialogue between the mother and Goldilocks, but it introduces conflict as well. Because Goldilocks, let's face it, she's an adventurous little soul. She wants to leave the white picket fence behind and go out into the woods to see for herself what's out there. But the conflict comes when she knows she needs to obey Mama, listen to what her mother says, and stay in the yard. So ever so little, she inches closer and closer to the gate that leads out from the yard. Now, what you need to do as a storyteller, just as Goldilocks does, is introduce these characters and get your reader to identify with this character. We've all been kids. We have all been told, don't do that. And so what's the surest thing you know is going to happen when you tell a little kid, don't do that? They're going to want to do it. We can all identify with that. We also want to make her a sympathetic character. So once the reader can identify with her and feel what she's feeling and understand what she understands, we also begin to sympathize with her, empathize with her. We feel sorry for her when she runs into trouble. And this all begins at the very beginning with the identification. In the very beginning, we also begin to identify the plot. Because in this dialogue with the mother and Goldilocks, the mother tells her that there are dangers out there. And you know right away she's going to leave the yard. And she is going to find some danger out there. Now, you have done all of this in your introduction. You have created these characters, introduced them, given dialogue, even narrative. You'd have to describe what the yard is like, what mother is like, what she sees when she looks beyond the gate of her yard. forest and the trees. Maybe she sees a deer running. What kind of description can you give with your story that will set the scene? So, what happens now? We take it from the very beginning. We take our story to the middle. As soon as Goldilocks leaves that gate behind, she's in the middle of her story. She's acting on her impulses, and she is deepening the conflict because we, as writers, need to get more inside her head. Just as you get inside your character's head, you have to tell the reader what they're thinking, what she's doing, what she's feeling. And, of course, in this situation, Goldilocks is thinking, I know Mama told me not to leave the yard, but, gee, look at this. This is really neat. These are the woods. What kind of adventures can I have here? And so she's going through, you know, down the path. She sees the stream, and we know what's going on with her. She leaves, and she starts to get deeper and deeper into the woods. Here comes the sympathy with the character. Your job as a writer, make the reader know exactly what is going on in her head, what she's feeling, what she is seeing. Maybe she hears an animal not too far away growling. She gets scared. She looks around her. The woods are deepening. The trees are getting taller and bigger. It's getting darker in the woods. She's getting scared. Now she's getting tired. She's getting hungry. And we, as readers, need to empathize with her. And your job as the writer, is to make the reader do just that. Empathize with her. Make your readers feel it all. So now she's lost, and she decides she wants to go home because she's tired. And so we leave Goldilocks maybe sitting on a rock by a stream, and she decides, I'll rest a few minutes, and then I'll turn around and go home. We leave her, and we go to another part of the woods. These other characters that we alluded to before, the three bears, there in their little cottage in the woods, nestled there, and we see Mama Bear serving porridge to Papa Bear and Baby Bear. Now, from this little scene, you as a writer need to show the reader exactly what the dynamics are here. And you show that with your characterization and the dialogue and the narrative. Is Mama Bear a neat housekeeper, or is she not the best in the world? Is she, does Papa Bear treat the family very nicely and say, good morning, Mama Bear, and how did you sleep last night? Or does Mama Bear say, hey, come on, guys, get up, it's time for breakfast? All of this is up to you, and I know this sounds a little bit simplistic doing this with Goldilocks, but if you take this very basic story and apply it to your own writing, it becomes second nature eventually. So you do all this with dialogue and the narrative and the characterization. Show us the dynamics of this little family. Papa Bear sits down to his porridge and he says, oh, this is too hot. And Mama Bear sits down to hers and she says the same, this is too hot. And Baby Bear sits down and says, this is too hot. So now, which character would you like to suggest? Let's go out for a walk in the woods while this cools. Because the characters that you choose to say that line may seem innocuous at first, but it tells the reader an awful lot about the dynamics of these characters and how they interact with one another. So anyway, Papa Bear, Mama Bear, and Baby Bear go out for a walk in the woods. And they're gone, and now we go and pick up Goldilocks again. She's sitting on her rock, and she decides, okay, I've rested, it's time to go home. And she gets up and she walks through the woods. But poor Goldilocks, she's a little bit directionally challenged. And she heads the wrong way. And she ends up, as we all know, at the cottage of the three bears. And again, that's the scene. What does she see when she approaches it? Maybe she sees a nice little picket fence around it, nice manicured lawn. She goes up and looks in the window, doesn't see anybody. She taps, no response. She goes to the door, no response when she knocks. She goes around to the back of the cottage. Oh, happy day. Someone left the door open. So she goes in, and she looks around. And on the table, she sees the porridge. Well, she's hungry. How fortuitous is this? And she tries the porridge. And, of course, you know, oh, this is too hot, this is too cold, oh, this is just right, she eats the baby bear's porridge. And then she'd like to sit down, so she goes to find the chair. This is too hard, this is too soft, this is just right. She sits and she breaks the chair. Now, if you notice what's happening here, we have what we call the rule of three. We have three bowls of porridge, three bears, three chairs, and then she goes into the bedroom. And there are three beds. One is too hard, one is too soft, and of course baby bear's bed is just right, and that's where she chooses to go to sleep. The rule of three. Now, for some reason, we human beings like things in threes. And good storytelling employs this little technique. We maybe have two situations where our character is unsuccessful and then on the third try achieves success. Or think of a joke. Think of some of these jokes that you've heard. Some of the ones that were very popular way back were a priest, a rabbi, and a minister. The rule of three. It's always this rule of three. So, have the Goldilocks, the four bears just wouldn't work very well, I don't think. This works. And so this is something you can use in your writing. So now we have Goldilocks asleep in the bed. We leave her. Go to the other characters, the bears. They come back because they figure their breakfast has cooled. And they come in and Papa Bear looks at his. And, of course, what does he say? Someone's been eating my porridge. And then Mama Bear says the same. Someone's been eating my porridge. And then poor little baby bear sees his bowl and he says, someone's been eating my porridge and they ate it all up. How do your characters react in a situation in which they come up against something like this? A surprise situation, an obstacle, a confrontation with a person. What kind of dialogue can you employ to show what's going on inside their head? Next thing, they go into the next room and they see the chairs. Now, Papa Bear says, someone's been sitting in my chair. Well, how does he know someone's been sitting in his chair? This all speaks to characterization. Maybe Papa Bear is anal retentive, and he likes his pillows on his chair in a particular way, and he recognizes that they've been moved. He would never leave his pillows that way. Then Mama Bear goes over to her chair. She sees that the cover on her chair or her upholstery is all wrinkled. She would have never done that. And then Baby Bear, of course, says, well, someone's been sitting in my chair and they broke it. How do these characters react? I mean, is Papa Bear ready to go get the fireplace poker? Someone's in his house causing damage. What does he do? What do your characters do? How can you show your readers what your character is feeling, how they're reacting? It's no good to tell the reader how they're reacting. It's much better to have them take some action. Go get the fireplace poker or call the police. Do something appropriate. Okay. Then they go into the next room, the bedroom, and Papa Bear says, someone's been sleeping in my bed. Again, the same thing. Mama Bear reacts in much the same way. And then finally, Baby Bear says, someone's been sleeping in my bed. And there she is. Well, this wakes up Goldilocks. She sits up in bed. She looks around. Now, think about it. How would you react if you wake up and you're faced with three furry faces of bears staring at you? How does Goldilocks react? Again, we have the identification and the empathy. She reacts by screaming and running out of the house. Suddenly, she remembers her way home, and she manages to find her way. That confrontation between Goldilocks and the bears when she wakes up is ripe for wonderful development. Now, with kids, we tell them this story, and we don't go into any kind of interpersonal relations or dynamics or anything. We make it simple. She wakes up, she screams, she leaves. For us as writers, think about what wonderful things you could do with this scene. How can your character, what can you do with your character to make them react, to interact? What kind of dialogue can you give them? What kind of description can you give them in this kind of confrontational situation? And then have them leave. So now we come to the end of the story. Goldilocks finds her way home. She runs to Mama. And Mama says, oh, Goldilocks, Goldilocks, where have you been? I've looked all over for you. And, of course, Goldilocks tells her tale of woe. I went into the woods, and I'm sorry. I learned my lesson. This resolves the conflict. She says, I will never disobey you again, Mama. This is the resolution of the conflict. And she tells Mother what happened to her and the lessons she's learned. And everything is happily ever after at the end. But we bring it to an end. We don't expect anything else to follow. We don't expect Three Bears to follow her home and sue for damages or anything like that. That's just not in our mind. And so we have had the beginning, the middle, the end. We've described scenes and developed narrative. We've developed our characters. We have had dialogue between the characters. We've had conflict from the beginning, and it was resolved at the end. And if you look at Goldilocks and the Three Bears in this way, very analytically in these terms of these elements, just keep it in mind as you write your story, as you write your novel. It will eventually become second nature to you. You won't have to think about it anymore. Because, as I said, this is instinctive to us. We love a good story. We know what a good story consists of. This just puts it on paper for us. This just articulates it for us. And we put it into action, and we have great stories that come alive.
Thank you, Joan. That was a great introduction. I'd just like to remind people that you're listening to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. Today's topic is Elements of Good Storytelling, and our special guest this hour is Joan Neubauer of WordWrite.biz. If you're just tuning in and may have missed the first part of the show, be sure to visit our website, authorsaccess.com, where you can find podcasts of all of our shows. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views and Loving Healing Press.
Joan, I can tell you, Goldilocks and the Three Bears are never going to be the same. After hearing your introduction here, it's like, oh, yeah, of course, of course. So as I was listening to you talking, I really realized that as a writer, I have to take the character, get into the character of each person that you're writing about. And so just give us a few tips on how we can easily do that, get ourselves into the character, get into the feelings, get into what the person is thinking. How do we do that?
Well, one of the things I do is make a character chart. And I have about 50 items on that chart, from physical characteristics, you know, the usual height, weight, eye color, hair color, all the way through education, social, economic status, favorite colors, and things like that. And I give these characters all these characteristics, and then I try to become that character. Try to look at the world for a while through their eyes. If my favorite color were fuchsia, for example, and I had three PhDs behind my name, and I loved to travel to the Far East every year, what would my life be like? How would I view the world? How would I look at the guy who delivers my mail every day and the librarian that I check out books from with at the library? And I find that a fascinating exercise. One of my favorite authors is Robert McCammon. He has a wonderful way of doing characterization with his characters. He does it so well that you know what's going on inside a character's head by the way they walk, his choice of words for them. And choice of words is something very important, so far more important than I think a lot of people realize. Supposing, for example, you were describing a woman, and she's 5'4", weighs 120 pounds, she's 40-ish, dark hair, dark eyes, attractive, and you give her the adjective of matronly. What room of the house do you suppose you'd picture her in? Most people would say kitchen. On the other hand, if you have this same woman, 5'4", 120 pounds or so, attractive, and you give her the adjective of Rubenesque, you picture her in a very different, room. Most people tell me bedroom. So try to get inside their head by using the character chart. Try to look at the world through their eyes using that chart. And then think of some word that fit that particular character.
Joan, I've got a question. I mean, given that I've got this huge chart, you know, that's complete, I've done all of my backstory, and now it's time to introduce my character. If it's me, I just want to blurt out everything. How do I introduce a character a bit at a time so that the reader can visualize the character, but yet I don't overload them with detail?
Well, and I know what you mean. As writers, we know so much about our characters. We want to tell the world everything, too. And that's not always necessary. And we only need to give the reader what is needed at the time.
Ah.
So anything that will, A, move the story along at that particular moment, something that will develop the character, something that the reader will need to know at a future date, or something that explains the situation right now. So those are three things. That's the test. That's the litmus test, as it were.
That bears repeating. Could you repeat that again?
Okay. Something that will either move the story along, develop that character further, something that the reader needs to know, or something that explains the situation, either a present situation or something to come.
Perfect.
That's the litmus test.
Wow. So that just makes me think then for the next thing, how do you end a chapter with a hook so that, you know, sometimes when I'm reading, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to finish this chapter and then I'm going to go to sleep or I'm going to do this or that. Mm-hmm. Well, I get to the end of the chapter and there's this darn hook. And guess what I do? I'm on to the next chapter. How does the writer develop this?
Well, some people like to write, and this is one thing I like to do. I like to finish out the scene at the chapter and then take a chunk of that scene at a critical point and move it to the next chapter. Because, for example, if you have these two characters in a knife fight, they're parrying and they're thrusting and they're moving around each other, sizing each other up. You got to leave the reader right there or with somebody drawing first blood, because the reader's going to want to know how that ends. You got to get the reader right into the thick of things, where they are sitting on the edge of their seat, and they're wanting to know what happens next, and then you just end it. And so what some authors do is if they're going back and forth between a couple of different characters, that scene, that knife fight scene, for example, at the end of Chapter 5 won't pick up again until the beginning of Chapter 7. So they really hook you.
Wow, that is good. Can you give us just a brief idea of maybe the three biggest mistakes that a first-time writer would make? What should we be on guard for?
Oh, well, the biggest thing I see is not a good ending. So that's number one. Please, you have to, your story is like a gift, and you have to wrap it up in nice, shiny paper and a nice, pretty red bow. And the ending is that pretty red bow. And it's just incomplete without it. The other thing we see a lot of, and that new writers particularly need to look for, is writing in the passive voice. And that is using a lot of forms of the verb to be. Am, is, was, were, be, become, became, are, been, being. And I also put would in there, W-O-U-L-D, because that is conditional tense and it's very weak. Passive tense is passive verb. Verbs are very weak. Excuse me. They slow the pace of your work down. They are boring to read. And, you know, if you're going to put that much time and effort into a manuscript, you want it to be exciting. You want to replace those passive verbs with active verbs. Past tense verbs that show a lot of action, like drove, catapulted, wrote, talked, excited, aroused, jumped, those kinds of things, because that'll keep the pace up, that'll keep the dialogue, the narrative, everything moving forward, and it'll keep the excitement up. Let's see, what else? Backstory.
Yes.
Backstory. Some manuscripts have an awful lot of backstory. They tell everything there is to know about a character and then some. And none of it has any bearing on this particular story. It's very nice that this character had a horse when she was 12, but it means nothing to her now at 36. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. Has no bearing on this. Now, if on the other hand, the fact that she had a horse when she was 12, now she's in a situation where she has to take care of horses or investigate a crime that has something to do with a horse. Ah, now that little fact has some bearing because it has bearing on her motivation. But if there are no horses involved now, you know, chalk it up to experience, put it in your file. You know that about your character, and that'll be your little secret.
Wow. You know, I'm just learning so much, Joan. And earlier you had mentioned the rule of three, and, you know, that's the first time I've ever heard of this. So I want you to just tell us a little bit more about this rule of three.
A rule of three is a neat little technique. Think of some of the jokes that you know. You know, the dog walks into the bar, and he says X, and then he says Y, and then the punchline is Z. I mean, that's basically it in a nutshell. You have the three guys who walk into a bar, and, I do know other jokes than people who walk into a bar, but they're the most common, and they're the ones that people can relate to because we all know them. There's something about that number, and I'm not sure what it is, culturally, or it's an innate desire to see things in threes or to put things in sets of threes. But it seems as a species, we like this. And so if you have a situation in your book or your story, maybe you're doing a short story, the character has a goal. They have to accomplish something. So they try one time, and they fail. They try the second time, and they fail. The third time, as they say, is the charm. They succeed with number three. This seems to be a very satisfying thing for readers. In romances, very often you will read about the heroine who's had two failed marriages or two failed love affairs, and then she's really wary about having this third relationship. But, of course, because it is the third, and we have this rule of three, she succeeds with the third time. This seems to be a necessary thing, failure and then finally success on the third time for characters.
Wow. You know, the way you talk about it certainly makes sense. So what I want to know also is what, you know, fiction and nonfiction. So what would be some differences in using your model, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, or can this model be used for both?
Well, the model is basically used for both. There are slight differences between fiction and nonfiction. In fiction, of course, we have the beginning, the middle, end. And nonfiction, of course, we have beginning, middle, end. But in nonfiction, it goes one step a little bit further in the development. In nonfiction, when you have your beginning, I call it the tell-em. You're going to tell your reader what you're going to tell them about. What is this article or this nonfiction book about? In the middle, in the nonfiction, you have you have to tell them what you're going to tell them. In the middle is the tell them stage. That's where you go back to the first, you get your list of things you're going to tell them, and you actually develop them. You give them the 5 points or the 6 points you said you were going to tell them about in that introduction. And then the end, where in fiction you have the conflict resolution, in nonfiction you have a review of where you tell them what you told them. So you have to tell them what you're going to tell them, tell them, and tell them what you told them. And, I mean, that's a lesson plan for any teacher in front of the classroom for math, history, science, English, whatever it is, because you spend the first few minutes of the class telling the class what we're going to talk about today. And then you tell them, you give them the rules, you do the exercises, you develop your points, and then in the end, you review. You tell them what you told them. And that's the basic structure of nonfiction. Now, when you talk about narrative and dialogue and conflict and characterization in fiction, that also carries over into nonfiction because whatever you're writing about, let's face it, people are usually involved. and we care about people. And so we try to make the people we're writing about, whether they're primary or secondary to the story we're writing in the nonfiction, we try to make them come alive, because that will hold our readers' interest far more than just writing about, molecules or how to change the brakes on your car. It's far more interesting to read about the lady next door who learned how to fix the brakes on her car. We're voyeurs. As a species, we're voyeurs. We want to get inside other people's lives. And so we use all the same fiction techniques for nonfiction.
Well, it certainly makes sense the way you explain that, that's for sure, Jalen. You know, this we could go on and on for a couple hours just getting all kinds of information from you, and unfortunately we need to close this interview down, and it's like, oh my, but I still have a lot of questions. But I just want to remind the listening audience that your website is wordwrite.biz, that's wordwrite.biz, and they can go to your website, and I'm sure that you have an email address there that they can contact you.
Yes, they can. Yes. And, I have a nifty little tool for Word, Microsoft Word, that if any of your listeners would like this file for how to use Word to identify passive verbs, I'll be very happy to email it to them if they just say, please send me the passive verbs file.
Oh, good. Okay, that sounds great. Oh, gosh, Joan, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
This has just been so interesting, and I'm just sitting here with all the notes that I made on my paper and thinking, wow, it's an inspiration. So thanks, and this has been great, just been great.
Well, thank you for inviting me. This has been fun.
You've been listening to another edition of Authors Access Live, where authors get published and published authors get successful. You can hear us every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on InternetVoicesRadio.com. We'll be taking a break for the holidays, but we'll be back on the air Thursday, January 4th, when our topic is Secrets of Successful Book Marketing. And our special guest who will be joining us is John Kramer of BookMarket.com. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, www.authorsaccess.com. To hear a podcast of today's show or listen to podcasts of previous shows, please visit authorsaccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views and Loving Healing Press.
For Reader Views, this is Irene Watson of Austin, Texas, signing off.
For Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Volkman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wishing you all a good evening.